Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray. I'll be your host this evening. I'm coming to you live from Southeast Florida, Pompano Beach, this evening. And we're about to do a question and answer discussion show with a survivor professional. We call them hyphenates, who will co-host tonight's meeting and will field questions or topics that are brought up by you, the listener. All you have to do is call in on our dedicated phone line to participate on tonight's show. And everyone who does call in will have opportunities, multiple opportunities, to share during its broadcast. The show is recorded, as are all our shows, so you can listen later in the archives to any show that we've already done. We've done 3,000 shows. So if that won't put you to sleep, if you're having trouble sleeping, put it on our shows and you'll fall asleep. I guarantee it. With me this evening is Tammy Schofstall from Florida. Also, she's from Lighthouse Point, lives in Pompano Beach here with my neighbor, and she is going to trail me and co-host along with me, along with our guest co-host, our hyphenate, as well. But let me bring Tammy on first and welcome her to the broadcast this evening. Tammy Schofstall, thank you so much for being with me this evening.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Bill. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the nice introduction. Yes, I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and it's raining here, so it's been, I guess it's our rainy season, but it's all good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's raining here, too. I'm across the street.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, it's kind of weird, but I looked at the forecast. It's supposed to be thunderstorming all week this week, so... Don your rain hat and your umbrella.
Yeah, we have an unorganized system on us, no doubt.
That's true, yeah. Speaking of unorganized, tonight's co-host and hyphenate is one of the most organized people I know. No, he's a wonderful guy. His name is Jaime Romo. Dr. Romo is from Southwest Florida. California. He's from San Diego County. San Diego County is right below Orange County, which is right below Los Angeles County. So he's my neighbor in a sense from when I'm in California. But right now, Florida is where I'm at. Jaime is an educator, consultant, author, and a commissioned minister who promotes healing through abuse from abuse and prevention of child abuse, particularly abuse by religious authorities. Or in the context of a religious setting. He and I share that in our backgrounds, that each of us has a story that includes being abused by clerics, priests, and brothers, and so forth. He wrote a workbook, which I recommend, Healing the Sexually Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters. And it's an integration of various disciplines that led Jaime to become a certified trauma incident facilitator. He explains that while it's no secret I'm a survivor of clergy abuse, it's the journey of integration, transformation, and application that's most telling about my accomplishments and the life that I celebrate. He has a website at, oddly enough, www.jaimeromo.org, and I hope that you'll visit it. Jaime Romo, thank you so much for being with us this evening again. We always love having you as a co-host and a hyphenate.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it, and likewise.
You know, these shows are shared by a series of people who are like you in the respect that they're all survivors, but they're all professionals in various backgrounds and capacities. And we have ministers, but also therapists. Also, one of them is a former police officer, and we have a whole variety of different kinds of people who have a professional background, but are survivors. And it's a really interesting series. I hope people that are listening will call in. The number to dial, of course, is 646-595-2118, 646-595-2118. It's as simple as dialing that number, which is the dedicated number that we use every night on this show, to join our group here. And we are watching for panelists. Tammy's here to help me ahead of time try to identify who they are, so we'll know. But for right now, it's the three of us here, Jaime. And, you know, I'm wondering if there's anything that's been on your mind that you'd like to start the show with.
Thanks. I mean, and if it's however many people are on the line, I was thinking of beginning with kind of asking a few questions for yourselves and anyone else who might be on the line. And where that comes from is I just did a training related to TIR, traumatic incident reduction, and I'm in the process of becoming a certified trainer, so I can do the sessions but also train and teach other people to do them. And in this workshop, there was this exercise that I thought was really useful, and even it came up today. I had a little incident where I took something really personally that wasn't something that I did, but as I started to think about it, I asked these questions, and I thought, okay, I see where this comes from. And so, if I may, I'll ask similar questions, let me know, you know, kind of like how these land with you, if you get any insights about them, because I guess what I think can happen when we experience some kinds of abuse and trauma is that we can make these assumptions about ourselves, or, you know, expectations and so on about ourselves that are just they're not helpful. And so by doing a little bit of reflection, sometimes it untangles that for us. So my experience today was I traced something back to when I was growing up and something that, you know, related to my dad. I thought, oh my gosh, that's where that comes from. I thought I had already worked through that. So anyway, there are three questions and a follow-up with each of those. And I'll just ask those in a loop. So I'll ask them, let's say, three times. And afterwards, I'll just ask you to, you know, if you've got any insight from those, or if you, you know, had any clarity or sense of connection with yourself in a different way. So the first question is, what do you need to do to be okay? Real simple. What do you need to do to be okay? And the follow-up to that is, so where does that come from?
Okay.
The second question,
what do you do?
Is,
oh, okay.
What
okay.
do you need to do to be okay? And where does that come from?
Right.
The second question
right.
is, what do you need to be okay? And where does that come from? Okay.
Okay.
And the third question, good, thank you, is what do you need to have to be okay? And Where does that come from? I'll just ask
so what
the
do
same
you need
question.
To do? Yeah.
Yeah. What do you need to do? Be okay. What do you need to be and what do you need to have? So just ask those again, and you might have a different answer this time, and that's fine. Again, it's just kind of exploring what's behind our thoughts. So, again, what do you need to do to be okay? And where does that come from? And what do you need to be to be okay?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you need to have to be okay? Where does that come from?
All right. All right.
One more time.
Well, would you want to do it again?
If you're interested, if not, let's just go with what came to you, what insights.
First thing I thought of was that I am okay. I'm not struggling, and I haven't for a while struggled. Mm-hmm. So I've explored kind of what you're talking about for some time now, and so I do have answers for all of those things, and I'm happy to share them. Tammy, I don't want to abscond your opportunity to share. If you'd like to share first, please feel free. It's up to you.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about this. You know, what do you need to have? I guess I'm going in a backwards order. What do I need to have to be okay? It's probably love, love for myself and love for my fellow human beings. I am one who feels unlovable sometimes, but I've worked around that. I feel like that I have gone out to find people to love. So, you know, if not one person loves me, I love people, and I give love, and I have found that, you know, I get love in return. So what do I need to have? I need to have a sense of love for myself and love for other people, and then hope that I get love back in return. What do I need to be? I think I need to be a decent person, you know, with high, you know, high ethical standards. That's important to me, you know, being a survivor who was always called a liar as a kid to cover up somebody else's abuse, being able to tell the truth and keep my integrity is very important to me. Am I always successful? No. Do I try hard? Yes. So I need to be a good person. I need to do everything I can, knowing that I'm going to fail sometimes. We all fail as humans, but I think I need to be a good person. And what do I need to do? I need to follow the golden rule. Treat people like I want to be treated. I think that's what comes to my mind. And I know it's a little backwards from what you asked, but that was going through my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done.
Now, how about
the
follow-up questions for each of them? Where did they come from, those things?
Well, the love has to come from my heart. In my head, you know, it's real easy, I just made the comment, I feel unlovable. That's coming from my head, you know. What's it going to take to make me feel lovable? I've got lots of people who love me. I don't have a partner in life, you know, that's the void I have. And, you know, until I get that filled, you know, I have friends who love me, I have family who love me, you know, my cat loves me, my grandson adores me. So I do have love. I know I'm lovable, but I haven't gotten a partner in life. You know, I have such thick walls, or maybe I'm just too mean. I don't know. But I haven't, you know, I haven't found that special person to love me. So that's, you know, the love that that is in my life has to come from my heart and my head. What do I have to be to be a good person? To be a good person, it's got to come from my head and my mouth and my actions and, you know, controlling my emotions. Because, you know, if we become emotionally inept, then, you know, it's real easy to, you know, in the heat of the moment, you know, a lot of people are beaten in the heat of the moment. You know, a lot of people say things they shouldn't say in the heat of the moment. So where does that come from? Control from my head. And what do I need to do? I guess I need to follow the golden rule. And, you know, that comes from my behavior, you know, the same place. You know, it's up to me to be the kind of person I want to be. You know, we all, as survivors, we all say we're not going to repeat that. You know, I'm never going to, when I grow up, I'm never going to treat anybody like this. I'm never going to do anything like this. I'm never going to do this. And some do. You know, sometimes we become the people that we don't want to be for various reasons. But we have to remember we have control of that. You know, I have to remind myself to keep my self-esteem up. I have to remind myself that I am lovable. I have to remind myself that, you know, not to watch my sharp tongue and not say things out of anger that's going to hurt other people. You know, I've got to make sure that, you know, I turn the other cheek. You know, you can look at somebody. I will never forget one time I had this guy I worked with a long time ago. He was in Chicago. I was in Augusta. And he was kind of a jerk. And, you know, he would write these emails, and he was such a jerk and so arrogant that he could have told me the sun was shining and I would have taken offense to it. And finally I took it to my boss one day and said, look what this guy wrote, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, what's wrong with it? Well, you know, he didn't have that conflict with the guy. And, you know, and then I started looking at a different perspective. You know, you can look at somebody and say, hey, she probably thinks she's all that. And you can look at that same person and say, you know, she has a nice smile. I wonder what she's going through. And you can see them in a completely different perspective, and it's up to me to be mean-spirited or not. I don't know. That's just what's going through my mind. Your thoughts?
Well, those are great answers. Jaime, what do you think?
Well, thank you, for one, for just to, you know, think through those things, because I think that a lot of times when we haven't done some of our healing work, we may think, you know, what I need to have for myself. You know, an earlier version of myself, I would have needed to have like titles or certain things, you know, certain positions, or what I needed to be was like I needed to be perfect, or, you know, what I need to do, I need like do everything. And where did those come from? Well, they came from a place of insecurity, and that came from, you know, some woundedness, and so those questions for me can you just generate, like, yeah, where are my motivations? You know, and is it from a place of woundedness or is it a place of love? What you were saying, you know, loving myself is like, yeah. So I don't really need to have those things. I need to have inside or this love. I mean, so I really appreciate your sharing that, your reflections, and I think that is the healing journey, that we become more grounded and connected to ourselves and what is the best about ourselves, and, you know, evaluating maybe the decisions we made in the past and then letting go of what wasn't helpful. So I appreciate kind of reflecting together on, you know, where are we in our self-awareness and our self-love, because coming from abuse and, you know, earlier wounds, those can get us confused. And so I appreciate your thoughtfulness.
Yeah,
how
I
about
do
you,
too.
Bill?
That was good. Okay, for me, as I said, the first thing I thought of is I'm pretty much I feel fairly fulfilled, you know, today, which is kind of a new new idea compared to where I came from anyway. So what do I need to do is really, I need to continue to do, I'll just put it that way, continue to do all the things that got me to the place that I'm at. And there is a myriad of them, including remembering that I'm not alone, that I have a higher power, you know, that I have people around me all the time who it's new to understand that you know, they're on the same journey I am, whereas originally I thought I was completely alone, and I know I'm not now. It's a result, though, of the work that I've done, you know, in recovery, and I need to continue to do that work is the point. I can't let up on it. When I let up on it, I see myself as sliding back. I haven't done this in a while, but sometimes sliding back to a place of fairly significant depression, which is certainly where I came from when I first got here. I was a really beat up guy. You know, I was really desperate to do whatever I had to do to get out of it. And I think that was actually beneficial that I was as low as I was. I mean, I kind of crawled into my first recovery groups meetings, you know. I was not proud. I was beat up, and I was teachable. I was completely teachable. So I still think I need that kind of being that open. Sometimes a newcomer will say something to me that will be new, frankly, or more often that will remind me of something that I just haven't thought of in a long time. And so I think the realizing that I'm not alone in the sense that I'm not alone on the earth by myself, that I have many other people that I can now turn to, but I have to do the turning. It doesn't just occur. I have to show up. Same thing with God. You know, God is always there, I believe, but where am I? And I have to show up for God to listen, you know, to petition to God maybe in prayer, but also to listen in the stillness that I can occasionally give myself the opportunity for. Those are all things I need to do, and they came from, as I say, my experience was so bad when I first got here, and I don't want to ever forget how desperate I was. I was miserable, desperate, lost, and beat up. What do I need to have? Or what do I need to be is the second one. Again, I think I've achieved something that is, I don't think I need more than I have. I don't need to be more than I am. NASCA is a reflection of that. By the way, I don't think I'm done. But with NASCA, as far as NASCA is concerned, we did reach a plateau not too long ago, I think, in my mind, which told me that I thought that NASCA would outlive me. So not that I'm any big deal, but I did found it, and it is a legacy, if you want, kind of thing, that NASCA is now out of my control, which is good. You know, it's more and more out of my control. It's being run by dozens and dozens of people, and I still do important and integral jobs for NASCA. But if I, you know, died tomorrow, NASCA could continue and would continue in some perhaps slightly different form. But I think what I need to be is I kind of cherish the fact that I am the founder and the CEO, and so as a leader, one of the things that I've always strived for has been to build community. I mean, that's really important to me to build. I come from my spiritual background is that I was thinking of priesthood, as you know, Jaime, and I lived in a communal experience while I was in the seminary. They were stressing the fact that we were part of, even though we hadn't taken vows, but we were part of the monastic community. This was a monastery, Benedictine. And it was all about community, 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 community. And I believed in that. That's why I chose where I went to school, because it attracted me in that sense, to be a part of a group, a big group of hundreds and hundreds of men who would go out into the world and do the work. And then what do I need to have? Again, the answer would be, I have what I need to have. I have places to go, people to be with, things to do. I'm pretty fulfilled. I have a love in my life, Tammy brought up in Christina, who is extremely supportive, and she's not a survivor, by the way, but she's able to understand the importance of what it is I do, and she never interferes. In fact, she participates to some degree. A lot of people know her or her voice. You know, I have a decent place to live. I've never had to have a highfalutin, you know, mansion type place. Never had to have a brand new car every year. Never had to have none of that material stuff attracted me. I need a car, and I have a car. I have two. I have one in L.A. and I have one here. You know, I need a home, and I have one. I have two. I have one that I own in California, and I have one that I rent here. And that's a little bit of a struggle, but we're making it. And I have, I have recovered from a couple of surgeries, the last one being fairly serious, but I'm really literally back on my feet again. So I have my help. And when I needed the help, I got it. I had to show up for it. So I don't feel a need. I don't feel a need to have anything beyond what I already have. That's really what a special thing to come from, because I've always been needy for lots of things. And I don't feel that way today. I know if I ever wanted to, I could call Tammy, I could call Jaime, and I could call our panelist who's just joined us, Ekaterina from Canada, I'm going to bring on. And all three of you would instantly answer my phone call. Yeah, that's pretty special to have. It's not limited to the three of you. There are dozens, maybe hundreds. I'm sure there are hundreds of folks who would take my call. If I had need to speak to someone, and I do, I call people. Jamie knows. I've chewed her ear off a couple times. So that's how I would answer these three questions. Let me welcome Ekaterina Jaime. She's from Calgary, Canada, Alberta, and we love having her on the line with us. She may or may not have heard your premise, your three questions, so let me ask her that, but let me first welcome her. Ekaterina, thanks so much for calling in and joining us this evening.
Hi, Bill. It's such a pleasure to be on. I didn't hear everything, but I did hear your very heartfelt description of how to basically crawl out of that desperation state. You know, and for me, it's very enlightening and very inspiring. I know I said it before, but I'm just in the beginning of this healing journey. I was in denial for a lot of years, and just listening to you speak, it's really gives me some hope as to where I can be one day as well. So I'm glad that we have this community in place, and I'm glad that I can call in NASCA when I feel alone. I look forward to this discussion and seeing what else everyone has in mind.
All right. Well, the premise came from Jaime Romo, who is our hyphenate and co-host tonight. Dr. Romo has been doing some training, and during one session that he recently attended, three questions were asked, and he asked them of the show. What is it that you need to do? What is it that you need to be? And what is it that you need to have? And the second question behind each one of them is, and where does that come from? Where does the need to do X come from, and to be X come from, and to have X come from? So that's the topic that we've talked about. What do you need to do? What do you need to be? What do you need to have? And where did those things originate? Where do they come from in your background? Did I express that okay, Jaime?
Oh, yeah. And I just asked him a couple of times, knowing that there's not just one answer. And sometimes we just need to slow down and let what's underneath our initial thoughts come up. And I appreciate your very thoughtful responses. I mean, I think we need more ways to come to integrate, you know, all of us, and know what's kind of our best self, and be able to appreciate where we've been, and maybe ways and times that we've been more coming out of, you know, fear or hurt or anger or whatever. I mean, there's that old way of saying, you know, like, I'm not okay, you're okay, or I'm okay, you're not okay. And what I hear more in the value is just, yeah, we are okay. And we have a better sense of why that is true for us. And we've let go of things that gave us the impression that we weren't.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to participate in tonight's show, just call in 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. We'll bring you on the panel like we've just done with Ekaterina. And you can answer some of these questions or not. It's up to you. There's no pressure. But our special guest tonight, Dr. Jaime Romo from San Diego, has posed them by way of getting the show started. And we will cover other topics as well. Anything that's related to prevention, intervention, or recovery is fair game for tonight's show. Jaime is a survivor himself, but he's a professional in the capacity of being what he's brought up tonight is he is a certified trauma incident reduction, TIR, facilitator, and shares with me that we were both abused by clergy, and that's one of his areas of experience and expertise, but not limited to that, all kinds of trauma recovery and so forth. So, Ekaterina, now that you've heard some of this, do you want to take a stab at any of those questions or perhaps in any order?
Yeah, I mean, sure. For me, what kind of resonates with me at this time is the need to cut toxic people out of our lives so we could transcend the next level. Because, you know, from my experience, I've surrounded myself with good people a lot of the time, and I've always been optimistic. I try to educate myself with listening to podcasts and personal growth, information on YouTube or read books. But as much as I did and as much as I thought I was okay, the theme that kept coming back is you cannot reach the next step in your recovery unless you cut out the toxic people in your life that keep reminding you possibly of the flaws that you don't necessarily have, but they gaslight you, sometimes they threaten you, just to keep you in that state of perplexity, in that state of trauma. And it's especially hard when, you know, those people have been part of our journey, whether it's our friends or it's family or it's acquaintances. I realize that you can't fully heal unless you let go of those voices that kind of keep you stuck, and those voices come from the people that keep you stuck. And that's my journey right now, because that's where my denial has been is, you know, you don't want to cut off your own family. You don't want to cut off people you've known for many years. And I resisted it for the longest time. I made excuses for their behavior. I second-guessed my intuition. But then sooner or later, it all comes crashing down, and you just see that this person was a wolf in sheep's clothing with their own traumas, and you can't save them. You know, they have to work on themselves and come to that realization of consciousness, I guess. But at the same time, you have to protect yourself and keep them at bay. So that's kind of where I am right now, and that's why this trauma is, like, I could handle it before. I could manage my traumas before. But as soon as I allow these toxic people back in, I'm triggered, and then I feel like I'm back being that little girl or that youth who was rejected by the people that was supposed to love her. But being a high achiever, you know, it plays tricks on your mind when you are doing everything that's, you know, good in society standards and good for your own life, but people around you tell you that you're not good enough. And then on top of it, when you get struck with an illness, which is kind of where I'm at right now, you're marginalized and you're basically told things like, you know, how are you going to survive? Or, you know, you're basically getting the reflection of that you're not good enough. And that's when you hit that point and you just like your survival depends on it, basically on your environment, you know. And I'm learning to let go of those connections, and I'm learning to say no more often, to call people out on their behavior, or even sometimes not even call them out, just walk away in silence. But it's been a really difficult journey because, you know, when you think the best of people and you think, oh no, you know, I'm never going to, like, they don't intentionally mean to mistreat me, but in reality, they are intending to mistreat you. Like, they're actually doing it and they know what they're doing. You hit a brick where something has to change, and a lot of the times it's walking away and cutting them off or reducing those contacts. What are your thoughts on this?
You've brought up a lot of things for me, because I kind of answered the question that was posed, each of the three questions that was posed, based on where I am now. But I need to remember that I wasn't always here. it's taken me a long time to get here. And so there's all kinds of things that you said that I, you know, agree with, that that I could have answered with. You know, in other words, what do I need to do? That's probably the length of a book, Jaime, you know, for me. Because I've done so much, and there's still so much more to do. I don't know what else is coming down the pike, but I know I'm not done. I have that sense that I'm not done. That's okay. But I also have a sense that I've moved quite a bit down the path of recovery in terms of, like I say, where I came from, being so beat up and so forth. And what I need to be, I think I'm, again, I've striven for finding the right position for me in life, whatever that is. And I've kind of decided that a lot of my goals has been to be a community builder of various types. And I've done this with other communities too. But with NASCA, I really feel quite fulfilled. Again, I could write several chapters of the book that I described before about what I need to be. And what do we need to have? I didn't know what I needed to have for a long time. I was scrambling for the wrong stuff. Now, unlike you and Ekaterina, I did not value the titles. I did value the experience, but not the titles. So I didn't achieve, if you want to call it that, degrees and so forth. I know I have like a doctorate in life, kind of, but I don't have any. I don't even have a college degree. I stopped before I finished my college because I thought, well, I don't need it. I don't need a degree. Why should I continue? And that's how it's kind of been. And that has meant something to me personally, in that I can't get certain kinds of positions. But on the other hand, what I needed to be was an artist of some sort. I always felt that I was creative as a child. I knew this, and I was not driven that way, not directed that way by my folks. So I had to wait for the opportunity to do that on my own. And I tried all kinds of things. The only thing I was able to do in my youth was sing, which I did very well with. And it led me into, you know, the field of music per se. But I never learned an instrument to the degree that I call myself a professional musician. But I played music all the time. I also went into film and television. My abuser was a photographer, and he taught me photography along with all the trauma that he gave me. And that's really directly linked to the career I attempted to have later in film and TV. And, you know, I was very successful right up until the time I got sober. I was on a trajectory to be a relatively successful producer. But then when I got sober, you know, coming from that place of being so beat up, I discovered I couldn't work. I lost all the momentum that I had had up until that point. And rather than go through a litany of other things, I'll just say that I've ended up being a creative person, which is what an artist is. I believe an artist is a person that's creative in everything they do. And I have striven to do that. So I feel successful because I certainly could, and I think others would agree, could say that, you know, the kinds of things that I've done with my life in the last, 20 years have been creative things. Out of the ether, you know, out of the ashes, rise the kind of the castle of Nazca, for example. And I was instrumental, obviously, in putting that together and attracting people to help. And now it's a movement, you know, almost. So I would have answered differently. I appreciate your saying that, Katarina, about where you are today, because I wasn't really thinking of where I am today. I was only thinking of where I am today, not where I've come from, which is a huge part of this, of the answers to those questions, Jaime.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. I have a bunch of thoughts, and so one in general is that called, if you think of it that way, or we're created to be our best. And there's a great expression that your vocation in life is where your greatest joy meets the world's greatest need. And it sounds like, you know, there's a shared joy in being of service, being in touch with things that matter to us, creativity, learning, not necessarily formal, and that serves the world's greatest need. I think we're on that journey. That's what I love about being with all of you. We're, I think, all in this journey to be of service, and at the same time, that draws us to grow. And, Katarina, when I was listening to you, I was thinking of this description about the earth, about the damage that we've done to our environment, and the author said basically, first we need to recognize what is going on. And so for us individually, that may be I have to recognize the pain in my life or the things that are not working. And then we have to, you know, stop doing some things. So we have to stop doing some things that are destroying the earth. And we have to stop doing some things that are harmful for us. And so when you were saying how hard to separate from the people who have been important, and at the same time, there may be some negative or toxic kind of communication or experience. And then if we stop doing those things, then we have to actually do some reparative work for the earth. We have to do that for ourselves. We have to do that. I think that's part of the kind of a natural flow of a healing journey that, as Bill pointed out, you know, we're constantly in that healing and growing and integrating. So that's one thought that I have. So I appreciate you sharing. And the other that is kind of related to those questions, so what's, you know, whatever that's important for us to have or do or be, you know, well, if we can figure out where that comes from, then maybe part of that sorting out is to say, well, I got that message from wherever, from my parents or somebody else or society. And we can question, like, well, was that message true? And if it wasn't, you know, if we can say now that wasn't really a good message, now we can look back and say, well, what was actually true? What was the right message that I should have gotten or understanding that I should have had? And we can be kind of more compassionate to ourselves and let go of that older interpretation. So I'm interested in, you know, that we're not stuck in whatever, you know, past we've had or whether current, you know, things that we continue to struggle with. But we have a trajectory to be our best self. And in that, I mean, the world needs healing. We all need to be more whole. Appreciate you sharing. Just added more thoughts to me about that. Yeah, we're in a healing process, and there are some things that come first and then second and then follow. And the other, you know, callers, Bill and Tammy, have, you know, good evidence of that.
Tammy, you haven't shared in a little while. You have some thoughts that you'd like to share now?
Well, I'm just listening. I think I've enjoyed the conversations. I guess where I'm coming from, you know, I've been on my healing path for a while. I'm like Bill. I'm not where I was once, and you know, I mean that in the sense that, you know, I've come a long way. And folks who are at their healing journey, at the beginning of their healing journey, like Katarina said, that, you know, she's just starting to come to terms with this. You know, there is hope, and sometimes we slide back, and you know, to take two steps forward and one step back, but then you still have that one step ahead of where you began. So, and I was one, you know, growing up being called dumb, stupid. You know, I did go back and get my degrees, and I have, you know, I haven't quite finished my doctorate yet, but, you know, they're very meaningful to me. And it didn't matter how many degrees, I finally had to come to the terms, it didn't matter how many degrees I got, you know, I'm still going to be seen as that dumb kid to my stepfather, you know, and I had to get to a point to where, you know, I had to be comfortable with myself. You know, and you know, I'm one, you know, I joke around, I have fun, I'm loud, I'm obnoxious sometimes. And some of my friends, you know, where I hang out, you know, some of my friends, some are not. Some of them make smart comments. Some of them just, you know, they like me. Not everybody's going to like you. And, you know, you can have 10 people in the room and 8 of them adore you and 2 of them don't. And you're going to focus in on the 2 who don't like you. And that's where I am to strive to not really concern myself, you know, with those 2 that put me down, that, you know, belittle me or, you know, make jokes of me. It's real easy for people to think I'm a joke. And, you know, sometimes I absorb that, you know, I'm a joke, you know, I'm a joke to these people. But then again, you know, I've got to, you know, pick myself up, you know, pull up my bootstraps and say, their opinion really doesn't define me. It doesn't matter. I could do backflips and they're not going to change their opinion about me. So I've just got to move on and focus in on the 8 people who are on my side. Because not everybody's going to be. The folks, you know, I think Katarina said, you know, sometimes you have to cut off the people who, you know, who hurt you and bring you harm and put you down. And that's not easy. Right. You know, I've got this group of friends, you know, here in this area. They're mean-spirited people. They're friends. Bill's met a couple of them. They're not bad people. They're just kind of a little on the mean-spirited side. You know, if you're either in or out, you know, if you don't play by their rules and hate who they hate and like who they like, they'll throw you out of the club. And I got to the point to where, you know, I wanted to be in that club. And then I thought, why do I want to be in that club with those people? You know, and now, you know, I'm friends with them when I see them. If not, I don't care. You know, I've got to get at a different point to where, you know, I need to be comfortable with who I am and understand not everybody's going to be on my side. Not everybody's going to look out for my best interest. They certainly didn't when I was a kid. People who were supposed to love and protect me, you know, treated me the way they did, you know, why do I think every stranger I meet is going to treat me like that? But then again, you know, I've got to take responsibility for, you know, my own inner health and say, you know, those people aren't going to like me, but that's okay. As long as I don't, you know, absorb their opinion of me, who cares? You know, I just got to get over it. They're just not going to like me. So I don't know. That's just what was going through my mind. That's all.
Well, you brought up a bunch of stuff for me. I certainly, but let me not take this too much of the stage here. Go back to Ekaterina. Thoughts on anything that you've heard so far?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Well, first of all, I love the analogy with the earth and then what Tommy said about reaching that point where, you know, you're okay with people not liking you. I guess the next level is, what do you do with those people that you kind of rely on and depend on? Like, for instance, doctors, or you could even have, maybe you're working with a lawyer and they're a crooked lawyer, but you're so trusting of people that you think they have your best interest in mind, and then you find out that they don't. So then you step into a whole different level of, oh my God, like this person is playing a big role in my life or in my healing journey, like my physical healing journey or my livelihood or anything of that sort, but they're not acting for my best interest and I'm dependent on them. Like I can't actually just simply go to a new provider or find a new lawyer or find a new, you know, person that you literally started something with. That brings in a whole different complexity. And sometimes you feel powerless when you're in that state. But then you try to figure out, well, how do I maneuver my way around it so that my own interests are kept in mind and I'm not harmed any further? But this is kind of something what I've experienced in the last little while, is that seeing people in power being corrupt, and then people in organizations that are meant to serve society be corrupt. And it does something to your psyche, because you realize that it's not just the people in your immediate environment in your life. Like, these are people that get paid to help, and they are doing the opposite, and you need the help. Like, for instance, let's say you have a medical condition and your specialist told you need to go and get this blood work done, and your own doctor is playing games. You know, she's not available for you to do this blood work that you have been waiting to do for half a year, for instance, and you feel like you're slowly dying. And then you go to other doctors and they keep telling you, you need to go back to your own doctor. So it's like little things like that where you actually need to become a savvy patient and you need to figure it out. Just like you need to become a savvy person and realize if your lawyer is trying to screw you over or someone is trying to screw you over, you need to figure it out and get another legal advice. You know, pay those that extra $300 to protect yourself. Life is so complicated, and the people working in these systems are even more complicated. So I just want to ask you guys, like, is there some words of encouragement or words of wisdom that you can share if you've been through something similar like this?
All right. Amy, what would you like to say?
I want to acknowledge how difficult it is to feel a kind of dependency, or kind of we don't have a choice. I mean, choice is one of those foundational things about us feeling okay about us having a sense of, I don't know if you'd call it purpose or your agency, but, and so any situation that brings up that sense of like, I don't have a choice is really, debilitating. It's something that becomes wear us down. And so I guess that's one of those questions now. Is it true I don't have a choice in this? And if not, I mean, is there another way? Is there something I'm overlooking? Is there something that's been suggested? Is there something that I've agreed with or something I've disagreed with? And just sort of a series of like continuing to explore so that what we are doing is a choice, even if that choice is really difficult, because it's really difficult to start over. It's really difficult to step into something new and new and difficult. But when people do have a sense of, I'm choosing this, it makes all the difference. I mean, I can say different studies in different fields. So I guess two analogies is, one, there's a kind of suffering where, you know, athletes experience when they are pushing themselves to achieve something, like if it's difficult and painful. But that doesn't bring suffering. I mean, that's difficult and painful compared to if someone has some kind of illness that is happening and it's a different kind of suffering. And so there's a purpose to it. If we can find some meaning in it, some purpose, and that we are deciding on that, that makes all the difference. That's one example. And the other is when people move from one country to another, if they don't have a choice about it, that could be the seeds of, you know, destruction, of morale, of sense of agency. Whereas when someone decides, you know, I'm going to go to this new place, and I'm choosing that. Maybe it's because I think that's the only thing I can possibly do, and I'm going to be difficult and uncertain and all that. When there's that choice, that agency, it makes all the difference. So I think I just want to acknowledge, sounds like you're talking about some difficult situations, and I'm wondering how you can start to explore where your choices are, where you, however small and simple, that will make a big difference. It certainly does in my day-to-day. So those are some initial thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a great show. If you're interested in participating on it, all you got to do is call in on our dedicated line. You still have a half an hour left and plenty of time to engage with somebody else. What is it that you need to do? What is it that you need to be? What is it that you need to have? And where did those things come from? The number to dial is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. The voice you heard just prior to mine is our co-host tonight. He's a hyphenate, a survivor, and a professional, Dr. Jaime Romo from San Diego, California. And he posed these questions at the top of the show, making this a really dynamic episode, I think. So please do call in, 646-595-2118. You know, the first thing I reacted to when you said these questions originally was that I had done a lot of work. If you break it down, as I said, I could write a book on all the things that I've gone through. I think it's interesting, though, if you go even before that, because that's where does this come from, comes from. The question, where does this come from? And I was raised in a situation where I was frustrated. As I said before, it wasn't really recognized that I was kind of creative, and that I had these interests in anything to do with the art, anything to do with the arts I wanted to do. So I didn't get trained in it as a youth. And that led to a frustration that brought me later into hanging out with what I call lower companions. But some of those were like street musicians or played music in some of the pubs and bars in New York City when I was in my 20s. I joined those kinds of groups of people because they accepted me. There was a lot of drug and alcohol use too. That didn't hurt because I also needed to not be Bill. I hated myself. And, I did not ask for the abuse that I experienced in my teen years, all through my teen years, but that is, in fact, where some of why I need what I need comes from. I struggled with being acceptable. I struggled with how to fit. I struggled with not being afraid of being abandoned, which was a huge one for me, the fear of abandonment. And so these things really come from, in terms of the problem stuff comes from, and also the solution stuff comes from my experience as a youngster. I didn't need to, like I said before, I didn't need to be thought of as a professional in the way that you are, Jaime. The Katarina is, and Tammy too. All three of you are people that are extremely educated, professionally educated. But I'm not. But I have a huge experience in the education of what it's like to live a life, life on life's terms. But that doesn't translate to anything that I could. And see, I think where that came from is one of the things I knew about myself because it was stressed since I was very small. For me and my sister, was that we were going to go to college. We heard that since we were tiny. You're going to college. Both of my parents had gone to college. Both of them had put themselves through college. My father on the GI Bill after World War II, and my mother, when we were children, put herself back to college. She had, again, during World War II, she had to drop out of college. She had a couple of years, but she needed a couple more, or more than that, to fulfill a degree, and she got it. She went to work for a travel agency, paid for her own education, and went to Old Dominion College in Virginia and graduated with a degree in library science, which she put into good use when we moved to Connecticut. She was the research librarian in the community in Stanford's public library system. So we were presented, the point is, you're going to go to college, you're going to go to college, you're going to go to college. And I did go to college, and so did my sister. But neither of us finished. And I wonder, there was a certain kind of pressure put on us as youth that I think I resented. And possibly part of that resentment, resulted in my, revolting against, against the need to get the degree. I probably have 3.5 years of college behind me, but I never went for that last few credits because in my mind, I don't need the degree. I'm well enough educated to go off and do some work in film and television, and that's what I did, or journalism. So film, TV, and journalism are kind of my my background. These are very interesting concepts, Jaime, and I really appreciate you bringing them up because they make me reexamine who Bill was, who he became, and who he is now. So it's, again, three pieces to it. What I was is the struggle, is the abuse and the struggle of my youth. What I became is kind of the journey that I've been on. And where I am now is today, wherever I am today. And all three of those I have to continually recall. Sometimes, you get too far away from, you get too much into the solution and you forget about the problem. It's one of the reasons that newcomers, I think, are so important to us, Jaime, because they keep it fresh. And when they come in and they share, we hear ourselves in them. Oh, yeah, I remember when I went through that. And I may not be thinking of that anymore, which is good, but I can't forget it either, lest I slip back at some point. So those are some additional thoughts. Anybody want to respond to anything?
I do, Sammy.
Go ahead, Dr. Hunt.
Well, it relates actually to Tammy, something you brought up, and Katarina, and it resonates with me. There was, this that's related to this idea of like, so where did these ideas come from that we've taken up about ourselves or about what we need to have or do? And a colleague sent me an audio book called It Didn't Start With You. I think that's the name of it. And it's a book about how this person, I think as a therapist, heard all these stories that is the clients like unpacked where their phobias came from or where their certain behaviors came from. They discovered that it was like a mystery. They didn't know. And then they realized there was a story about a parent or a grandparent or an uncle or aunt or someone from a different generation who had experienced something that was traumatic or that really changed their life, or it was a huge, loss. So, and somehow they picked it up, and it wasn't in some cases even that it was communicated directly. And as I said, it kind of like reminded me of comments that I've heard earlier about education. My dad, was with a group of people thinking about Father's Day coming up, and my father had a second grade education. He was a smart guy, but had a tragic life, and he just regretted and had so much grief over being taken out of school by his father, and I really appreciated. I always thought, well, I valued education because in that way, in my head, growing up, kind of miserable, that was my way out. But last night I was thinking, actually, I think I picked up my father's sense of pain about people not considering him smart, and even though he was, and not being good enough because he hadn't had these degrees. And I'm the first in my family to have a doctorate and all these other things, but it struck me, like, wow, that wasn't just me. So it was something about asking, where did that come from? That when we can untangle that, we can say, oh, well, that's not me. Maybe this is me, maybe that's not me. And then kind of move forward because we're closer to, what's important to me? Why? This is how I'm choosing it. This is how I'm wearing it now, or letting go of stuff that wasn't helpful about that. So, resonated with me when I heard a couple of others talking about education. Thank you.
You guys are all really educated guys. You don't know each other necessarily, but you're all extremely educated. I'm intimidated. No, I'm not.
Well,
but
Bill,
I love all three of you. Go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I wanted to make a comment on that because, like I said, growing up being called dummy, stupid, to this day, people, it's really easy for them to write me off as a joke just based on my personality. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. That was a big driver in getting my education to prove to everybody and myself that I am not that dumb kid that everybody labeled me. But what I discovered, too, I want to finish my doctorate. That's very important to me. I've put it off way too long. But, when I got my bachelor's, I have a GED. I'm a high school dropout. I mean, I'm also a high school dropout. So I have a GED, associate's, a bachelor's, a master's, and I'm working on my doctorate. When I got my GED and my associate's degree right out of school, that was fine. I got that. That was an achievement. And then when I went back and got my bachelor's, that was an achievement because I always had that glass ceiling over my head. These days, people can get good jobs and they can be successful without the degree. A lot of these plumbers and electricians, that's what's in high demand because a lot of the baby boomers are retiring. It's not like it was in the 80s and the early 90s. Well, we would promote you, but you don't have a degree. This person has a degree. So it would, getting the bachelor's degree broke a lot of glass ceilings for me. And then when I got my master's degree, I thought, I'm just the it. I've got a master's degree. And when I got into the doctorate program, I'll never forget this. My first residency that I went to up in D.C., everybody was using these big words, and finally the professor. he said, you know what, y'all can put the thesauruses away. You're not really impressing anybody. I know all of y'all. This is your first residency. I know all of y'all. He didn't say y'all. All of you all, you know, have a master's degree, and I know you're quite proud of it. Go hang it on the wall. It means nothing when you get into this doctorate program. And that really caught my attention. And then the way of learning in a doctorate is completely different from the bachelor's and master's. It's not about what you can memorize. It's what you can research and try not to plagiarize somebody else. But I learned a long time ago that it didn't make my education, you know, it's never going to make those people see me in a different light. My stepdad, you know, he still thinks I'm a dummy. You know, people still write me off as a joke. I have them, but it didn't make me a better person. You know, it did open a lot of doors, and it did enlighten me in a lot of ways. But it didn't, you know, it didn't make me a better person. And you got to remember, I work for a man right now. To this day, I'm sitting in a building that he owns, a yacht club in South Florida, in a hoity town. He's got a construction company, and he has no education, and he makes my payroll. So, you know, there you go. So it's not all about the degree sometimes. That's just what's going through my mind. That's all.
And Katarina here, Tammy, that was so powerful. You know, when you said that, I was just starting to think, because you see, the reason why I'm having such a hard time is because this whole facade that people present themselves to be, all these degrees behind their name. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm a social worker. But they have, what I've learned is that it really comes down to who you are as a person. If your heart is good, if you have moral values, if you have ethics behind you, if you want to do good in the world and you want to act right, that is so much more important than what degree you have. Because like I said, you know, I've met lawyers that were corrupt, that did not follow ethics or protocol, what's drilled to them in school. I myself, I had my degrees, but the only reason why I got them was because my parents were always trying to sabotage me. You know, they were always telling me that I was not good enough. And when I told them that I'm going to be a doctor one day, it was when I was 8 years old, I wanted to become a doctor. And it wasn't even the doctor. What was going through my mind was, I'm experiencing all this pain in my life, and I just want to take that pain away from other people. You know, and I got exposure to the disabilities field. I worked with people with disabilities that were so vulnerable, and I started working with them since I was 16, and I saw the pain in their eyes, but I didn't understand why it was there fully. I thought that the system sustained them. I thought that, you know, every disabled person is taken care of. They get a payout from the government, every month. And look, they have these care aides, which was me at the time taking care of them. But I couldn't figure out why this pain was showing up in their eyes. And then it wasn't until I myself finally reached medical school. And that was the point. I worked so hard to get there, and I got sick in medical school, and here I am today, you know, with an autoimmune condition, and none of that matters. And in that school, I looked at my peers, and I just saw that, you know, not everyone here is super smart or super ethical. They try to weed you out in law school, in med school, social workers, you know, but the reality is a lot of people just go for these degrees because they think it's the right thing to do, but their heart isn't there. And then once they get there, they are the ones serving society. But since since they weren't really there for the real good reasons, like helping people, for instance, that's where corruption breeds. So, you know, it's interesting for me when people are like, oh, yes, like I'm not educated, or, you know, they feel down. But you know what? Schools are not made all the same. Some degrees are easier to get, like a bunch of lawyers get into law school with an arts degree, you know, or it doesn't mean that they're the super smartest or they're the super humanitarian or they want to fight justice, just like, you know, everyone else, social services industry. They can be disconnected from trauma-informed care. Many don't even know what it is. They lose sight of what's important. And, you know, it's kind of devastating that it's happening, but then it's beautiful that the people that go for it for the right reasons, like, you know, you, Tammy, and even Bill, like your journey, you created this foundation, NASA, that's incredible, or the PhD caller on this line, you know, like these are just signs that you had a mission in life and you went for it, and the degrees were just something to boost your self-esteem, to boost yourself up, to keep you going, to show others that you were not a nobody. Starting NASA is huge. Not everyone can do this. Start a non-for-profit that people are going to rely on, like I am right now. I'm relying on NASA to kind of keep me afloat during a time in my life where I feel pretty down, you know, because I reached the height of my career and it was all taken away with an autoimmune condition, and I'm trying to crawl out of it. But I realized the root of that condition was trauma. You know, it was trauma. So it's really amazing. Like, if you're in a mission, you're in a mission, and nothing is going to stop you. But if your heart is good, then you're definitely unstoppable. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Boy, Jaime, you've picked a topic all right. This is great.
Well, I mean, thank you, everybody, just for sharing it. I think, Katarina, what you said, you realize, you know, trauma is behind all kinds of stuff going on. I mean, there is a connection, of course, you know, between unresolved trauma and chronic stress and our physical health and, you know, and how people cope. And if people can develop all kinds of coping mechanisms that a kind of escape or ways to cover, you know, and then that works. And for a while, I guess, you know, we have different addictive maybe behaviors. And, you know, Billy talked about that. And so these are in the context of what's happened to us, then they make sense. It's not, of course, you know, what's wrong with us. But this is part of, I think, our human condition. One of my favorite quotes is, you know, Tara Deschardin, I'm sure I've shared it before. It's, you know, we think we're human beings having a spiritual experience, but we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And this human experience can be tough sometimes as we figure out, you know, what's not us, you know, sort out all the stuff that we've internalized from what happened to us or what happened around us, and then what we've kind of taken up and believed about ourselves, even stuff that was not true. So that's why I ask these questions. That's it. I just find it really helpful based on things that, you know, something happened today, a little incident that I know it took me a while to like say, hold on, I don't need to now drop everything and forget everything that I know, because I've interpreted something, I took something personally. And then, so it helped me to ask myself, you know, well, where did that come from? And I realized, oh my gosh, well, that came from something when I was growing up. That came from, like, how I needed to think somehow that my behavior was the cause of my dad's drinking and the violence that we, you know, and the misery that we lived in, all that stuff. Actually, well, that wasn't true. But it was still, that little piece was still with me. I got, you know, connected to it, something else today, which I found out later on by talking to a colleague. All my team members have had this unexplainable or weird experience with this one client, and oh my gosh, it wasn't me at all. It just helps me. I think we're all on the journey. So thanks for sharing yours.
Thank you.
I think it's great. Right, Katarina?
These are amazing.
Sorry, I stepped on you, Katarina. Were you going to say something?
No. I was just saying that when, you know, this is the healing power of heartfelt, raw conversations. It's our life stories that make a big difference. And when we're on our own at home, like before I even picked up the call and I phoned NASA, I was feeling depressed. You know, I was in my own thoughts, and then just being on the show turned everything around for me. Like every time I call in, I feel more hopeful. I feel more connected. I feel more energized. I feel like, you know, life and my journey is worth fighting for. My health is worth fighting for. Life is worth living. And it's incredible, these conversations. So thank you so much for being on here. And thank you, Bill, for founding NASA, because without you, we wouldn't be able to have these conversations.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, where did this come from? It came from the mouths of thousands and thousands of people who I'll never remember who they are, and a few books, you know, and my own journey. But I didn't ask for this. It kind of came to me. All of my life came to me, including my childhood. I didn't ask for that, but it was what was given to me, and apparently it was supposed to be the basis of the life that I've lived up until now and whatever I do in the future. And I think that's, you know, God working in my life, because, you know, it, both the good and the bad are a part of Bill. You know, I'm putting quotes around bad, but the experiences, all of the experiences, good and bad, are part of who Bill is and do affect and color the things that I do, the things that I am, and the things that I have, all of that. And so this has been a terrific show for me. We have just a few minutes left, by way of explaining that I'm hurrying a little bit. We have about 6 minutes left. So perhaps a couple of minutes for each of the guests here, Katarina, Jaime, and Tammy. Perhaps we'll start with Tammy. She hasn't spoken in a little bit, to finish up some final thoughts for tonight's show. But I thought it's been a terrific episode. Tammy, do you agree?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it was a fantastic show. The questions, those three questions, kept us going all night, and I think it gave all of us a little bit of self-reflection. And I know it certainly did me. You know, when Dr. Roma first asked the questions, you know, I was thinking, you know, where do I go with this? And then, you know, when I said what I said, then, you know, my mind kept going, you know, kept feeding it. So thank you for those questions. It really did give me, and I'm sure everyone else, a lot of self-reflection. Where we've been, where we are, where we want to go, and why.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Katarina, some final thoughts?
It was a great show. I've learned so much from everyone, like I always do. So definitely, I'm just going to keep calling more, because like I always said, NASCA is my therapy. So for anyone listening in, if you can't find a trauma-informed, counselor if you feel alone. You don't have to be alone. Just call the show, and, you know, there's a gang here in place, a good one, that's going to support you. NASCA has become a new family. So, yeah, no, thank you so much, and I encourage everyone who's listening to call in the future.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate you. Every time you participate at Katarina, which is fairly often, I'm thrilled because you're always adding to, you know, the stories that people are telling or the issues that people are bringing up, and it's really appreciated by me. That's not the case with Jaime Romo because he always confounds people, at least the beginning of shows. like Tammy said, where am I going to go with this? But she did fine. All of us did fine. Jaime, I'm being facetious. I love you very much. You know this. But I want to give you 2 or 3 minutes here to, you know, to close out with some final thoughts from our survivor professional co-host, Dr. Jaime Romo from San Diego.
Oh, thank you. Well, one, I'm just appreciating the opportunity to be with. I mean, in my role formally, you know, I ended up in a place I didn't expect to be. And I come to value that deeply. And years ago, I did a reunion for my undergrad, and, you know, we had these tracks. One was like staying the course, and one was detours or changing lanes. Another one was detours, and then one was crash landings. And so I facilitated the crash landings group because my life at that point was in a completely different place than I thought I was going to end up. And, you know, with these high-achieving people, and it was just so good to have people say, you know, yeah, I didn't expect life to turn out this way either. And, you know, where I am now or where I'm going is, like, so important. There's so much value from having crashed and coming now, figured out now where do I want to go? How do I adjust? So I just appreciate the community of practice. In education, I was in a community of practice. We reflected on, this is an example of my work. And, you know, what others see that I'm not seeing, that I can grow. So thank you. There was a thought. I must have just forgotten, so it must not have been that important. what's distracted me is we got a kitten the other day, and she's like a baby. So she's tearing stuff up. And, oh, I know what it was. It was Bill saying the good and the bad. I'll share a quick thing that happened today. It was amazing. And I've thought about my this iteration of my life as kind of, I have these high hopes implementing trauma-informed care and TIR, traumatic incident reduction, in this big health system that I'm a part of. I've only been there for 6 months, but I've got these big dreams and energy. And I thought, well, maybe it's going to be like a labyrinth, you know, like you think I get closer and then takes forever, but eventually I'll get there, so just enjoy the journey. Today, I connected with someone who is the director of some really significant programs. He said, you know, you may have gotten a shortcut in this conversation because I totally want to see what you see. And I don't know how that will go. But, what strikes me is that we don't know. You know, all this stuff that at some point may seem so frustrating, and all of a sudden, something opens up. And so I'm with you all in that journey of uncertainty, and, you know, Bill, you're an example of, like, creating something with legacy. That's where we're, I think, all doing, whether we realize it or not. So thank you all.
You know, Jaime, my original thought about a career was to be a priest. I thought I had a vocation, and I do have a vocation. I was asked at the Minor Seminary over and over every year a couple of times, why are you here? And what do you want? And I would always say, well, I want to be in a place where I can always continue to grow, and where there will always be an opportunity to help other people. That was my answer. And, you know, it occurred to me early in my recovery that God had seen fit to find me the way to get what I wanted, completely circuitous route that I never, never would have chosen for myself. So that's what recovery is about for me. Those kinds of realizations are really important. I appreciate the conversation this evening very much, Jaime. and want to thank you and Tammy and Ekaterina for making the show as good as it was. It was a terrific show. This is Bill Murray in Southeast Florida, saying thank you for listening tonight. Join us any night you want, Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, for other editions of Stop Child Abuse Now. May God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
I'll know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.